When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Maury Rose, the two-time winner, takes the lead from Faulkner. That's the way they finish the first lap.
It's Schumacher!
The Brazilian and the Colombian driver, I couldn't help it, but and take back, oh my goodness. Well, Nelson Piquet, understandably livid with rage.
Committee meeting about it, stick it on and send him out.
Well, this has blown it for Irvine, blown it for Ferrari. I don't know what's happened.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum, and joining me because Matt is on vacation is Mr. Frenchy. Sir, how are you? Thanks for joining. Thanks for hanging out. We've got lots of F1 stuff to get to today.
Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to it. Happy to stand in for Matt, although there's some big shoes to fill, I guess.
Yeah, well, listen, don't inflate his ego too much, because then he's going to come back and like call me old like 3 times an episode instead of 2 times an episode if he gets to listening this week. But before we get to Hungary, which is this weekend, I don't want to start with the Red Bull stuff. So we're going to start with some silly season stuff and work in. Oh, actually, I have a question for you first. So Tom Cruise was watching at Mercedes box last weekend or 2 weekends ago, and Harrison Ford was down with Williams, Alfa Romeo, somebody less good. So if you were, a team principal, team owner, team manager, whatever, what famous person would you want to watch the race with that is not in the racing world? Doesn't have to be an actor, it can be a musician, whatever. You get to pick. Who's your celebrity that you want to hang out with?
It's a good question, and because Matt always calls you old, but I'm the one with like the actual old soul. So I kind of laugh every time he calls you that. But yeah. The first people that I think of are all passed away. So that's kind of awkward. I guess
they can be included. We can resurrect them.
That might be cool. I don't know. For some reason, I want to say George Harrison, because I know he used to be a big F1 fan and hang out with like Emerson Fittipaldi and Damon Hill, Jackie Stewart and all that. I think that'd be cool. Just, he's a Beatle, my favorite Beatle at least. So
that is an old type answer. One I respect though, because he's a very talented musician, and I'm going to keep it in the music world. This probably doesn't come as a surprise to you or any of my close friends, but I would go with Ollie Sykes, lead singer of Bring Me the Horizon, UK based. I know he's big into watching a lot of sports, and I think his life story is super fascinating. So honestly, I'd probably sit there and just ask him about life and about music more than I would about the race. But he's a fun dude who doesn't really care what people think about him, and I would like to surround myself with more people like that. So on that note, we've got some silly season stuff. You brought this to my attention the other day, and I forgot to post it on the PLP Twitter because, well, like I told you beforehand, I think I'm on like day 2.5 of migraine, and going on Twitter when you have a migraine is never fun. But so let's.
Did Twitter cause your migraine?
What's that?
Did Twitter cause your migraine in the first place?
Probably, man. Probably. So let's, in the hypothetical world that George Russell ends up at Mercedes in 2022, the summer break will give Mercedes a good chance to kind of, you know, figure out what it wants to do. And Mercedes has also said that one of its Formula E drivers would be a really good fit at Williams. So that'd be Nyck de Vries, who won the F2 championship in 2018, I think, or Stoffel Vandoorne, who had that dismal year at McLaren, not really any fault of his own, and is also in Formula E. I'm kind of less excited by him, but to be honest with you, I don't really know much about Nyck de Vries. So what do you think? If you had to pick between the two, obviously we also have, well, we'll add in there Hulkenberg, who has thrown his name into the ring. I guess technically Dan Ticktum, but I don't, that seems like super unlikely based on everything I'm hearing. And then the Torpedo, Danny Kvyat, has also put his name in the ring there. So if you're picking from that list, who are you picking to partner with Nicholas Latifi?
To be honest, if I were Nyck de Vries, I probably wouldn't leave where I am, because I think he's pretty young. I think he's maybe 26. And yeah, he did win F2 in like 2018, 2019. So he's one of those guys that probably should have gotten a shot in F1. So I would think they would pick him. But he's currently first in the Formula E point standings after double second place finishes in London this past weekend. And he's already won two races in his rookie season. So I guess if, you know, probably his dream is F1, and he's probably the best choice to go to Williams. But do you leave the Mercedes Formula E team to go drive around in a Williams?
Well, I see your point, but F1, I mean, no offense to Formula E, F1, I would rather ride around in a Williams, even if it meant like the occasional Q2 appearance. Like, let's say he's the George Russell, you know, he makes some Q2 appearances, has a few semi-decent results here and there. Obviously, maybe Williams is better in 2022 and onwards with the new car and the new regulations, but obviously that's yet to be seen. But I would rather be in F1 because there's probably more money. First and foremost, there's definitely more money. There's more of a chance. Maybe he impresses. And then, yeah, I know he's a little bit older than your typical F1 rookie at this point, being that he is 26. But, I mean, only 2 years ago, 2019, sorry, he was the F2 champion. This year, he's leading the Formula E schedule. He won the championship in the Korean Grand Prix. It's in Finland. It's not like Korean, the country. It's like K-O-I-R-A-N-E-N. So, you know, that Finnish spelling, some sort of Finnish series. He won that 2 year, won that. Won two separate championships there, a Formula Renault and then Euro Cup Formula Renault. I don't know what the difference is, obviously. And then Formula 3.5 the next year, he finished third. So he pretty much wins everywhere he goes. So he's definitely a good driver. He's you know, he's got familiarity with most of the F1 tracks. I mean, Hulkenberg, yeah, it's Hulkenberg, but I don't know. I don't get the Hulkenberg fascination that most people have. And I know you agree with me, but Stoffel Vandoorne, I have no interest in seeing him.
No, I think Nyck is the choice. And I think, honestly, going off what you said, it actually makes a little more sense to me now because, I mean, Lewis is, what, 39 or so at this point, maybe 38? So maybe he's older than that. I don't remember how old he is.
I'm looking it up.
But so I think maybe you could just take a Williams seat betting on the fact that Lewis would retire soon and you could potentially get into a Mercedes seat alongside Russell coming up in a few years.
Lewis is 36, will be 37 this offseason. But still,
okay, so I was a little off.
Your point isn't incorrect there. So on the same line, Toto Wolff feels that he has a responsibility to ensure that Valtteri Bottas has another seat in Formula One next year if he is not retained by Mercedes. Do you agree with Toto that he has a responsibility, or do you think Toto should just say, buzz off Valtteri? If you were actually Toto, not on our personal opinion of Bottas, what would you do?
I don't really see why he feels the need to kind of control the driver market. I mean, it's kind of his business to control his own team, and I guess those teams that have an alliance with them. But no, I don't really feel like once the contract is over between them that he has any obligation to Bottas.
Yeah. You know, I get it. I think because over the years they have jerked him around, said, go fast, no, don't go fast, let Lewis by, no, go fast, you're getting a crappy chassis that's been used 6 times and Lewis is going to get the new one, we're going to put tires on your car that are 2 months old. Obviously, I'm exaggerating. I get Toto's, you know, humanity side here and wanting to do the right thing, but at the end of the day, you kind of just have to worry about what's going on with your team, and you can't spend all this time making sure Bottas finds another ride, because then it's like, what if you put him in a Alfa Romeo and all of a sudden he's Alfa Romeo, or what if you put him in, I don't know, somewhere Alpine, and all of a sudden he's battling with one of your cars? Like, do you really want that? Because Bottas, as much as I can't stand him sometimes, he's not an awful driver. Like, he'll still be competitive-ish. So
He's someone that you don't just kind of throw away. So I guess you don't really want to cut ties in case you ever need him in the future at Mercedes.
Yeah.
But I think controlling the driver market in that way, like, you're not his manager. So, at least I don't think Toto's his manager. He does manage drivers. So.
Yeah. Good point. Good point there. Okay. So this story is kind of sort of confusing. And I don't know if you saw this a couple weeks ago, but it had been figured out because Mick Schumacher's mom was talking to Gunther Steiner that he was actually, the seat was in the car crooked. Which, I mean, it's Haas. What do we expect? I don't know why this took 6 weeks to fix. Like, they had to take, you know, into they, like, why couldn't they just do another seat fitting in, like, the last 2 weeks while they head off? So they're going to fix that this week prior to the Hungarian Grand Prix starting. I don't know why Mick didn't speak up, but I guess, you know, you're kind of just trying to survive your first year in F1 with Haas and your teammate torpedoing you at the start of every race for the last month now. So that was kind of interesting, kind of strange. And I guess, really, I'm so tired of talking about this Red Bull BS, but we have to bring it up, and then we'll get to, I know you had something, and then we'll talk about Hungary. So Red Bull has lodged a request for the FIA to review the crash between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen at Silverstone. If you've lived under the biggest of rocks, please just go to YouTube. I'm not talking about the damn crash again. But essentially what this means is they will have a video conference, 4 p.m. European time, I believe, ahead of the Hungarian Grand Prix on Thursday. So by the time you hear this Friday, the conference will have already taken place. Mercedes has been told a team representative must attend the hearing, but it will be allowed to send up to 3 team members. This is a Red Bull decision, as Red Bull had the ability to kind of ask for this further review if new evidence has come to light. So they present this evidence, whatever it is, to the FIA, and the FIA says, okay, you can move forward with this review. We don't know what that is. It can't be video related because we've already seen that. It can't be telemetry data because that's already been a push of the original accident. The last time this happened was 2019 in Montreal when Ferrari pushed for a review after a Vettel penalty for forcing Hamilton off track. The FIA deemed at the time that a Vettel witness statement, a video analysis from Karun Shandhok, and other videos and photos were not significant and relevant enough, so the review was dropped. So I guess this is pretty big if this review is, you know, bringing to light new data. So what are your thoughts on this cluster F.
Yeah, I think the data, whatever it is, the evidence that they would have to bring would basically have to be some kind of sworn statement from Lewis saying that he purposely wrecked Matt for this to do anything. Because it's the FIA, and they don't really like it when you question them, right? Like, they're now going to lock the door of the steward's room during the race, so you can't come in and try to, I guess, influence their decisions or anything. It would have to be pretty big evidence that, because it's egg on their face if they have to go back and reverse their decision of just a 10-second penalty.
Yeah, I just feel like at this point, this goes to what I said to Matt last week. It's like, all right, I get it from Red Bull's point, but like, you got to focus on you know, the championship battle here. You're wasting so much time and money and resources and whatever on this review. And it, listen, there might be evidence. I'm not going to say there isn't, but I mean, what else can we really find at this point? So I don't know. I guess we'll keep you in. We'll make sure everybody's up to date on what's going on there. I don't know how quick these reviews happen, but yeah, I did, before we get to your thing, Max Verstappen did a 24-hour sim race to make sure he was ready for this weekend, because he's all bruised and battered and still complaining, obviously. So good to see that he can, I guess, you know, I don't think we'll have any worry about him. I had heard some rumors that Alex Albon was actually testing in Silverstone in the off week to prep just in case. Oh, and I forgot to mention that Alex Albon is also being looked at by IndyCar teams. So if you listen to our IndyCar Silly Season episode, Alex Albon might be over in America next year. Christian Lundgaard, the news came out 4 minutes after I hung up with our guests yesterday, which is really frustrating because we don't usually record on a Monday, but since Matt's on vacation, I changed around the schedule this week, and well, you know, the racing gods have a way of making sure that Pit Lane Parlay is 4 minutes late on the news. Anyway, before we get to Hungary, you had something pretty cool that you found in an article. I'll let you bring it up, and we'll dive into something slightly not new news.
Yeah, before I get to that, actually, I had pulled up an article while you were mentioning the crooked seat with Schumacher, and some of these quotes are hysterical. Like, everyone's focused on Red Bull and Mercedes, and then Haas is over in the corner with, like, these absurd, just, oh, yeah, the seat was crooked and we didn't know. Type mistakes, like bigger concerns in the rest of F1, and Haas is just over there doing Haas things. But I think the best one I see out of this article from planetf1.com is that Steiner has said, "We hope it's not crooked," the next one, referring to the seat. So it's like, that's kind of pathetic, but you do you, Gunther and Haas.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. And I'm sorry, guys, I don't have any story time updates this week. I have been too busy to pester our lovely British friend.
That would have made your migraine worse for sure.
Oh, God, I would have ended up in the hospital.
Maybe you need some rich energy. Maybe that's a migraine cure. If we ask him, I bet he'll say yes.
You know, I'm going to try that this evening when we get done recording here. I like it. Go ahead.
Okay, so what I wanted to talk to you about was an article that I found on F1.com recently about the 5 most expensive Formula One cars ever to be sold at auction. Because recently, one of Lewis Hamilton's cars, the 2010 MP425A, was just sold at auction. And interestingly, it's sold for £4.8 million, which is about $6.6 million.
Holy
At RM Sotheby's auction. But that's not even a championship winning car. That's 2010. So I don't remember where Lewis finished in the championship. It was probably in the top three. But it's the first Hamilton car apparently to ever have been sold at auction. So it just goes to show you how much money those are eventually going to be worth. But so let me read these five most expensive Formula One cars ever to be sold at auction, and then I want to ask you a question about them.
Okay, go for it.
So in fifth place, we have the 93 MP48 driven by Senna. Took his last Monaco Grand Prix victory, and that sold for £3.6 million, which is about $5 million in 2018. In fourth place was that McLaren that we were just talking about. Then in third place is the 2002 Ferrari F2002, a Michael Schumacher Grand Prix winning car, one of the most dominant ever, because that season was
Yeah.
incredible. Sold for £5 million in 2019, which is up close to $7 million in today's
Holy
money.
shit.
And then we have two other, or one other Schumacher car, the 2001 Ferrari, sold for $5.5 million in 2017. And lastly, the most expensive ever was the 1954 Mercedes driven by Juan Manuel Fangio, who took his second championship in that car. For a cool £19.6 million.
Wow, that's like what, 25 million?
More than that, I think it's about close to £35 million.
Wow.
30 million, I believe. 35 or $30 million.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. I dig it.
So I wanted to ask you, given what Formula One cars go for, if you had the keys to any of these collections out there of Formula One cars, I know Zac Brown's got a pretty cool one sitting there,
Yeah.
wherever he stores all his cars. Which would you pick up as an investment piece? What do you think is going to be worth?
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate two engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
Earth and top these that have sold in the future.
So I'm gonna go one that's kind of new school and one that's really old and probably very unlikely. One of the Red Bulls from Vettel's championship run, I think would be cool. Or likewise, if Max holds on this year and beats Mercedes, I mean that's a mega value car right there because they are the ones who finally took down Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes after 64 straight years. On the other end, this is highly unlikely, but I've always been fascinated with kind of the, I don't want to call it like pre-Formula One days, but the Formula One days before it was like super organized and as it was like in the early 50s when it was like just becoming organized. But let me pull it up here. One of the Ferrari 375s or 375s, which was driven by Alberto Ascari, who the first, I think it was one of the first years of quote unquote organized Formula One, which like a full season, he won five out of the six out of the seven races, seven out of the eight races, and the next year, same thing. So I would love to get my hands on an old Ferrari like that, because I could actually probably drive it around the street without killing myself, because it's probably not too super powerful. But yeah, that would be mine too. What about you?
That's a super good choice. I think when it comes to Ferrari and then Ascari, who we know tragically died not long after winning those championships, that's going to be worth a lot of money. For me, I think when I was thinking about this, given that this was the first Lewis car ever sold and it wasn't even a championship car, I think you go back to his 2008 McLaren MP4-23 that he won.
Yeah,
against Felipe Massa, and I think that's one that you have to have, just knowing that it was Lewis's first championship and it started this dominant run he had. And then I also think another one that would be really collectible is James Hunt's 1976 McLaren, just for the cultural impact that it has with the Rush film and just everyone knowing James Hunt in that season.
Yeah, I dig that. I like it. All right, it's the Hungarian Grand Prix weekend. Let's see. First, I need to pull up the timing of everything this weekend. And while we get there, I thought it was pretty interesting. So, you know, the F2 and F3 schedules this year is, you know, they don't race all that often. They race three races in a weekend. And the F2 president or F2 manager said, our schedule sucks. Said it's too difficult. Three races in a weekend is really hard for fans to follow. It's really hard to get any sort of continuity. It's a little bit more confusing with, like, when does what does qualifying matter versus fastest lap of the race matter? When does the grid get inverted? It's definitely more difficult to follow. I mean, you know, this weekend in Hungary, F3 is racing at 4:30 a.m. Saturday, 11 a.m. Saturday, and then 4 a.m. Sunday. Like, I can't stay up there. And yeah, I'll watch it on replay, but yeah, it's difficult. And I think there's also Porsche supercars this weekend. But the F1 schedule, Friday morning practice, which I will not be up for, is 5:30 a.m. Saturday morning qualifying, 9 a.m. Sunday morning race time, 9 a.m. all times Eastern. We don't care about Central Time Zone, especially since Matt isn't recording this week. He's off eating blue cheese in some cabin somewhere, probably. So,
and listening to the Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah, he's definitely listening to the Stone Temple Pilots. Oh my god, I almost butchered that. Hungary results last year. The top five were... my list disappeared again. I promise you. I
think it's Lewis, Max, and Valtteri. I'm pretty sure we're the top three.
Yep. Can you tell me who was fourth and fifth that weekend?
In 2019, because we didn't have one in 2020, right?
No, we had one in 2020.
Oh, we did? Okay. I see that it's the time has gone by, and I just don't even remember.
Yeah, it was actually like a year ago last week.
Okay. For some reason, I thought Hungary was one of the ones that we didn't have last year, but I guess I'm wrong. It all blended together, being stuck inside my house like a prisoner, like everybody else. So I think I would guess that it was probably a Ferrari like Leclerc or Sainz, and maybe Norris was one of the fourth and fifth, one of those, or is it unpredictable? Was it Racing Point?
Racing Point is one. Lance Stroll was in fourth.
Wow. Okay. Don't think that's going to happen again this year.
And fifth was Alex Albon.
Ah, yes. Okay. Again, someone who I kind of forgot about. No offense to Albon.
Yeah. Yeah, he's off in DTM, obviously, like I mentioned, also looking at IndyCar. I love, and get your thoughts here, I love Hungary. It's a really cool track. It's not great for passing. I'd say kind of like Sector 1 in the first half of Sector 2 are pretty good for passing, and then you really have to wait until you get back on the straightaway. So... It's a very tough place. A lot can go wrong. It's very tight and windy. You can easily end up in a hitting a wall or spinning there. So it's a pretty cool track. Agree, disagree? I'm pretty sure I know your answer here.
Oh, I completely agree. This is one of the places that I love doing the most in the F1 video games, and I love watching races there, even if the action is not necessarily really great close racing. I think we get a lot of memorable results and moves on people. I mean, I know that both Fernando Alonso and Jenson Button both won their first Grand Prix at Hungary. And Damon Hill won his back in the 90s, and we had a race where he almost won it in arrows. So there's been a lot of great races. Nelson Piquet made that awesome Tokyo drift-style pass on Senna going into the first turn back in the late 80s. So there's been some really cool races there, and I'm excited to see what happens this weekend because I think Max is going to be even more fired up than he usually is.
So on that note, have you raced the F1 21 video game on your new Xbox yet?
I have done some F2. I have not done any F1 driving yet.
I'm pretty sure I DNF'd at Hungary, or did I finish like ninth? It was one or the other. I'm starting to get a feel for the game a little bit more now, but I'm pretty sure I smacked a wall pretty hard there. That inside curb right at the beginning of Sector 2, if you hit that, you're spinning in circles, and I'm pretty sure I struggled with that one.
I think that's turn 5 right there, I want to say. Yeah. That's super hard, yeah.
Yeah, turn 5, turn 6, turn 5 and turn 6 is murder in more so in the video game than real life, but it's a brutal one. All right.
Can I just say first that I'm really mad that there are no classic cars in the new game as a history nerd?
They'll be there. They'll be there, and the new tracks will be there eventually. I think they kind of rushed to get this game out for whatever reason. So, you know, anyway, yeah, I do agree. I can't wait for the classic cars to come back, but we'll supplement that with some fun F2 races in the meantime. Anyway, let me pull up who's driving this year, because despite covering every race, I still forget who some of the guys in the series are sometimes. That's what you call overtired. We're going to call this migraine brain. First up on the prediction list, we're going to do reverse of what Matt usually does the prediction orders. Who is joining the Q3 eliminations with the typical guys? So let's pretend Haas is definitely there. At least Latifi is definitely there. Maybe Russell. But yeah, who is going to be the surprise Q3 elimination?
I think a surprise Q3 elimination. Let's say that we see, I guess, Stroll getting eliminated, if that's maybe a little bit surprising, but also not this year. He hasn't been incredible. I could see him out pretty early.
I'm going to go, I don't know if this is a surprise, but he's made Q2 like every week. I'm going to go George Russell. I don't know if this is considered a surprise, but Matt's not here to tell me it's not, so I'm going to go with that because he's been so good getting into Q2 and even Q3 the last couple races that I think he comes back down. Okay, a dark horse to make the top 10 in the race.
Let's go with my boy Gio. Let's say that he qualifies 10th. Probably no better than that in the Alpha, but...
No, this is finishing the race.
Oh, finishing the race?
10th?
Yeah.
Mm.
In the top 10.
Yeah, let's just still go with that. It's not going to happen, but it'll be... I mean, he's finished, what, I think 10th at Monaco this year. So he's got to qualify really well to get up into 10th. But I'll say it just to be wrong.
All right. I'm going to go with Yuki Tsunoda. Started to round back into form the last couple weeks. Had a good Silverstone. I mainly only got into points because his teammate Pierre Gasly had a tire puncture on the last lap or second to last lap. But I think Yuki's in form for a good result this weekend. Okay. Who's having a bad weekend?
I think we're going to see a Ricciardo bad weekend. Ooh. Even though he's won a race there, I think it was 2014 or something like that. I don't think he's going to do so well this weekend.
Okay. All right. I am going to go with Carlos Sainz. Ferrari keeps talking about how they're not expecting much this weekend, which, if Ferrari has no confidence before weekend starts, doesn't lead me to feel good things about them. All right, who's having a good weekend?
I think, and I would just say Max, but I think that's too predictable. I think having a good weekend is Lando. He's probably going to have a good weekend. I think he's been on a streak, and I think the consistency and the momentum with him matters a lot. It seems like he's somebody who really gets up and going in the saddle kind of thing if he's got momentum.
Yeah. All right. I like it. You stole mine, so I'm a little pissed, but I don't want to go with Ricardo because then I end up a teammate battle. I'm going to go with Sergio Perez. Hasn't had a great track record at Hungary, but he's in the Red Bull, and I think he's due for a good weekend. We're going to add a surprise prediction here that I literally thought up while you were talking. Will there be drama between Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton this weekend?
I thought you were going to say between the Haas teammates because they seem to like to collide with one another lately too.
That's a given. I'm sure, you know, Mazepin right now is saying like, is just like, he probably like, you know, somebody stands in the mirror and like practices like a speech they're giving at like a conference or something like that. Like Mazepin stands in the mirror and practices his bullshit apology to like Gunther Steiner and his teammate. Like, I didn't mean to do it. He was just there. I'm racing. And, you know, whatever other garbage he says. So
he's the one that made the seat crooked. He sabotaged it.
He went in with a screwdriver, made it crooked just enough so nobody noticed for 7 weeks or whatever it's been. But
let's start that conspiracy somewhere.
Yeah, I think we should. Well, I'll go on Reddit tonight and I'll create an account called William Story's Best Friend.
Knowing how people feel about Mazepin, I'm sure there are plenty of people who would believe it and spread that around.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so.
Which is sad.
Drama this weekend between Red Bull and Mercedes could be on track, could be more intense off track barbs being traded in the media throughout the weekend. So, do you think it's going to get even more intense this weekend?
Yeah, I think we're just seeing the beginning of this. I was watching some clips earlier today, and I think it was 2019. Max and Lewis had a really great battle. Actually, Lewis went around the outside at turn four and had to give up a position and everything. But I think we're going to see some really hard racing because both of them are hard racers as it is. But now just kind of with all the posturing of the teams back and forth and really pitting them against each other, it's going to be more personal now. So I think there's going to be a big battle.
I agree. I think we're in for some epic war of words and war on the track. I think it's going to be both this weekend. So yeah. Anyway, I don't have anything else. So yeah, guys, enjoy the race this weekend. I think Matt's back from vacation next week. Frenchie, thanks for hanging out. Appreciate you filling Matt's seat for the week. It was nice making it 35 minutes without being called old for once. So everybody have a lovely weekend of racing, and we will be back next week to talk about it.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.